Last weekend, we started learning about the story of a woman named Esther, and we began exploring her life together. And I challenge you, if you weren't here last week, to come up with what we just called a not it kind of scenario in your life. So something in life that where you just think, hey, God, not it. Like, I don't want this. I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to experience this. It could be anything ranging from I find myself in this situation where I've got friends that are fighting, and now I'm kind of the person that's caught in the middle, and it's up to me to kind of figure out how to get them back on the same page once again, and I feel this responsibility or this burden to do that. Maybe some of you are in a job scenario. You know, you're feeling like, gosh, I feel like I really need to try and get a new job, but I'm afraid to do that. That's scary. Like, who wants to look for a job? Or maybe there's some shady stuff going on at your job, and you're like, I feel like someone should say something. I feel like that someone should not be me. That'd be really great if that could happen. Maybe some of us, we're locked into relationships or marriages, and we kind of find ourselves, we're fighting. It feels like we're in an impasse, or things have grown cold or difficult or challenging, and I just kind of find myself thinking, like, gosh, man, I do not want to be here. You know, you're kind of working through single parenting, and you feel like this is not how I imagine my life to work out. Or maybe you're kind of like, you know, you're at that age, you're starting to think, man, I always wanted to get married, and I feel like I'm, you know, it's not going to happen for me, or I'm not able to settle down. Or, you know, there's a million different scenarios we could come up about where we feel like, God, I feel like I'm going through this thing, and I wish I could just kind of raise my hand and say, not it, you know, uncle, I'm out. I don't want to be a part of this. I don't really want to do this. And unfortunately, we talked about last week that's kind of a scenario all of us are going to face at some point or another. And so over the next now 3 weeks, I guess, we're going to look at the story of this woman named Esther, and we're going to see, as this graphic says here, that we're going to learn courageous leadership for the rest of us, because I've not met too many people. I'm not a person where I think, man, I'm a courageous leader. That's for some, like, military general out there somewhere, some CEO or some, you know, really hotshot kind of big-time person. Not little old me, you know, and I feel like most of us, we kind of have that attitude where we think, man, that'd be so cool if someone else could lead through that, because I feel like I'm struggling to keep my head above water right now and doing that. We'll try and catch up a little bit this week, but I highly recommend if you were not here last week, you can head online to crossbridgechristian.com/messages. You can listen to last week's message, and you can join my mom in being the one person who listened to the message online last week, which is really great. Anytime you can join the immortal Terry Blackburn on something, that's pretty exciting. So if you were not here last week, though, as I described that, I imagine for all of us, it does not take a lot of effort to probably think about a scenario or a circumstance in our life where you think, yeah, not it. Like, I don't want to be it, you know? And so I'd encourage you to just hold on to that, because I think that's going to be helpful as we journey through this material together this morning. I want to talk today to us about the idea of courage, and specifically, I want you to think about this basic idea a little bit together this morning, that courage has a drive to do something. Courage has a drive to do something. It's driven to do something. It's driven to go somewhere. It's driven to do something. And I think all of us kind of sense that. You know, it's not very often that we feel like stories of courage happen when someone goes, yeah, I saw this problem, and so I just did nothing about it. And no one's like, oh, good job. It's so great. You know, awesome. You know, like at Miss America, when they're like, what would you do to solve nuclear war? She's like, nothing. And they're like, great, good job. You know, which is like, that's not courageous, right? We kind of get that. But even with that, right, we kind of struggle to calibrate this a lot of times, don't we? So I've had times in my life where I feel like, yeah, I know courage is driven to do something, but I fall short. I just don't do anything, or I do like what is a 1 in a 10 situation where that's needed, okay? Or tell me if you've ever done this, you know you need to do something, and all of a sudden you go from like 0 to 60 way too fast, and you overshoot, you know, the whole kind of thing right there, right? Your kid comes home and their report card has like an F on it or something. You're like, well, that's it. Never come out of your room for the rest of your life, you know? And it's like, oh, well, mom, that's going to be a little hard to enforce, especially when you die. You know, like, that's going to be a difficult one to kind of keep. And you're like, yeah, I maybe overstepped my bounds a little bit right there, and I maybe didn't help the situation a whole lot. And so I don't know about you. I'm always trying to correctly calibrate, like, okay, so, like, what is the right thing to do, but not, like, too much, you know, but not, like, you know, I'm not, like, being a wimp either over here. I got to find the right thing. And that's kind of what today is all about, that I want to talk about courage being driven to do something. I want to challenge you and encourage you today not to be passive in your situation, even if you're in a scenario where I'm waiting on something, I'm trying to figure something out. that there's a way I can even wait that's passive, where things happen to me, versus me waiting with like an active posture, like I'm looking for opportunities, I'm trying to seek out the next steps and that kind of thing. And even if you're in kind of a waiting, holding pattern, I think there's a way we can do that actively. I want you to leave here driven to do something today. But I want to talk about today, actually, the things I think that we can do before we get ready to do the big thing that I think prepare us really well to be used by God to make a difference in whatever it is that we're experiencing. And really, frankly, just honestly, I'm not very good at going 0 to 60, but if I can go like 0 to 30 first, that feels a lot safer to me. It makes me feel a little better. I think, as we'll look at today, it's a little wiser to do so as well. And so today, I want to be really upfront and honest with you. My whole goal today, we're going to walk through this particular section of Esther's story today. And my whole goal, we're going to note some things along the way that courage does. And I want you to leave today resolved to do at least one, maybe two exegesis points if you do three plus things, okay? Extra jewel in your crown. I don't know, whatever. I think I'm allowed to give those out. I'm not really sure. Anyway, I had to, you know, get licensed or something. But I want you to leave here today resolved to do something. Even if it's not the big thing yet, I think there are some actions that can build the underlying structures that can help us to get there, and I want you today to start to make some progress on what those are. Hopefully, what I'm talking about will become clear as we get going. Catch us up to date on the story here. 500 BC, Esther is this teenage girl, and in a crazy turn of events, Esther goes from just being this orphan teenage girl to becoming queen of the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. Okay, so pretty big time kind of change here for her. She's, again, a teenage girl, so she probably didn't expect this. She's not from royalty. This is not, you know, her kind of deal. She's brought in with this real piece of work king named King Xerxes, who kind of whisks her into the palace. Now she's all of a sudden the queen of the nation. Xerxes has a guy who his number two man is named Haman. And Haman is not a good guy. He is not a good dude. What we discover is Haman, when he's promoted to number two, the king has to tell everyone in the kingdom, all right, pay honor to Haman, you know, bow to Haman when he walks by, show him the proper respect and all this kind of stuff, which in this culture tells us Haman must have been a real jerk, because if someone had to tell you, okay, make sure to be nice to Haman, like that's never good. You know, when you're a kid, when you're sending your kids off to school, you never have to be, okay, be nice to that jerk kid, right? Like that's what you always have to do, right? You never have to warn them to be nice to the nice kids. That usually comes pretty naturally. And so Mordecai, Esther's uncle, the guy who raised her because she was an orphan, refuses to bow to Haman. He is like, I'm not having this. This guy does not deserve my respect and honor. I'm not doing this. And so Haman gets really, you know, worked up about this. He gets furious at this. Haman knows Mordecai is a Jew. And so Haman, we're told by the scriptures, is not content just to like deal with Mordecai and get him out of the picture. He wants to deal with all of Mordecai's people, the Jews. And so Haman hatches this scheme where he comes to King Xerxes, and he knows Xerxes is kind of, he's just had this failed military campaign in Greece, and now the palace treasury is pretty empty, and Xerxes is kind of desperate for money. And so Haman comes to Xerxes, and he says, hey, I got an idea. There's this group of people that doesn't pay honor to you, i.e. me, and I was thinking we should just get them out of the way. We should eliminate these guys. And to boot, here's the bonus, we can take all of their wealth and material resources after we do so, and we can just toss it in the palace treasury over here, and we'll be all set and ready to go. And so Xerxes says, sounds good. And so Haman issues this edict where essentially it's someday, a couple months in the future, it's open season on all the Jews living in the Medes and the Persians empire. Like people are just allowed to kill them, do whatever they want with them. Essentially, this is like state-sanctioned ethnic genocide. Okay, this is not a good situation right now. And this is where the twist comes in, because Esther is a Jew. And no one knows except her and her adoptive dad, Mordecai. And he has warned her against all odds, Esther, no matter what, don't let anyone find out, because this is not going to work out well for you. And it is especially not going to work out well now that in the current kind of political climate that Esther finds herself in. Up to this point in the story, we're going to start in Esther chapter 4. Esther has not said a word Esther's only a 9-chapter book in the Bible, so it's not like there's a lot of, you know, she's, what are you waiting for, Esther? Like, I only got a couple more chapters left to say something. Esther, up to this point in the story, she's just kind of been passive. Like, everywhere she's went, everything she's done, she's been demanded or asked to, but she just listens to the orders that whatever person in her life gives her at that moment. Esther is not the person that you would meet her and go like, wow, future leader right there. You go like, yeah, Esther, nice girl, sweet girl, you know, but you wouldn't think like president or something like that. You just think like, yeah, average, ordinary person just like me. And we're going to pick up the story right here, and we're going to see Esther make this transition from being this scared servant, you know, girl, like a teenage girl, to now the queen who's like leading the charge, who's getting ready to do some pretty big things. And I just want us to stop along the way and observe some stuff that we can learn from her story. So Esther chapter 4, verse 1. When Mordecai, this is Esther's uncle, learned of all that had been done, all this, you know, all these rules and things, he tore his clothes, he put on sackcloth and ashes, and he went out into the city wailing loudly and bitterly. But he only went as far as the king's gate because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. Okay, so he puts on mourning clothes, he's in signs of mourning. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, this edict to basically, hey, we're going to exterminate this whole group of people, there was great mourning among the Jews. Well, yeah, that sounds about right. I probably too. With fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So people are sad, they are mourning, they are seeking and asking for God to be at work in their story. When Esther's eunuchs and female attendants came and told her about Mordecai, she was in great distress. Now that word in Hebrew is the same word for like whirlwind. Okay, so think about when you get really disturbing news and you know that like feeling in the pit of your stomach where it's like, you know, you just feel like all those amazing, wonderful emotions at once. Esther's got that going on right now. Like she's just feeling blown and tossed and just in a whirlwind. And so we're told what she does. She sent clothes for Mordecai, right? Okay, hey, you can't come in because you're clothed in mourning clothes. You know, you put on some nice clothes so you're allowed to come into the palace so we can talk. But Mordecai is in such dire straits, we're told he would not accept them. Like he is so locked into what he's mourning about. Then Esther summoned Hatak, one of the king's eunuchs assigned to attend her. He's kind of like Esther's chief of staff, we kind of think, okay? And she ordered him to find out what was troubling Mordecai and why. Now, we should stop here for a second. Esther has no idea what's going on right now. Out here, everyone in the kingdom knows, yeah, like, it's a bad day to be a Jew because just a few months, weeks, whatever it is from now, we're going to be gone. Like, we're going to be done as a people group. And Esther doesn't even know. Like, she is not even aware of what is happening in the room right next to hers in the palace. Esther, up to this point in the story, is pretty much, I mean, I hate to kind of say it, you know, this might be an awkward conversation when I go to heaven and meet Esther one day, maybe, but Esther's kind of failing at being the queen right now. And no matter what your angle is, she's failing. Okay, so it's really interesting. If you read like Bible scholar type people that write books and stuff on this, really liberal, left-leaning scholars, they look at Esther and they find her to be a really huge disappointment because like she's not standing up to the patriarchy. You know, the real hero of the story is the queen before Esther who refused to give in to the king's wishes to be like, hey, baby, why don't you come out naked and parade around for me and my drunk friends? You know, like she's the real hero of the story, they would say, because like she stood up for herself. You know, she stood up for her rights. She refused to give in at all costs. Like she's the real hero, right? And then they look at Esther and they go, Esther, you're like the typical one percenter. You're like everything that's wrong with the rich people in the world. You're like so out of touch with all the needs of the common man. You know, you don't even know what's going on in the kingdom. You don't even know that people are facing this grave danger. Meanwhile, people on the right, you know, people who are more conservative leaning, who look at this story, they're disappointed with Esther because Esther doesn't embrace her identity as one of God's people. You know, Esther spends the whole story, she kind of keeps her Jewishness quiet, okay? Esther, we're told, like, she's whisked in to see the king and they're not married yet, and her and the king spend the night together, I'm sure just getting to know each other well, you know, favorite books, I'm sure, stuff like that. And they look and they say, Esther, you've compromised your sexual purity with a guy who's not a Jew, both of which are like big time no-nos, okay? You've concealed your identity as one of God's people, also a no-no. They point to Daniel, if you're familiar with Daniel's story. Daniel lived about 50 years before Esther in the same culture. He actually was one of the leading kind of nobles. He was essentially like the prime minister in the kingdom of King Xerxes' father, Darius, okay? And Daniel is a Jewish guy who embraces his Jewishness. If you read the story of Daniel, you know, he kind of comes in, he says, hey, I'm a Jew. I'm not going to defile myself with any of your unclean food, okay? I'm going to pray in public even when you outlaw it and say I have to do it in private, all this kind of stuff, okay? So they look at Daniel and they go, well, Esther, why couldn't you be more like Daniel? Why couldn't you act more like him? And so they're disappointed in her in this reason. And here's the reason I tell you this right now. Esther up to this point has been a failure in her own story, and she's going to turn it around. And the great news is just like her, you can too. If up to this point in your story you feel like, man, I've blown it. Guess what? So have most of the other characters in the Bible that we look at and draw inspiration from and learn how to follow and live as a child of God in this world. And all that has to happen is I wake up and today I decide today's the day. Right? My past does not have to define my present or my future. I'm going to live differently and I'm going to lean into something new, which is exactly what Esther does. And so the first thing that we see about courage is demonstrated by Esther is courage begins, she begins her little journey here, by listening to wise people. Courage listens to wise people. Esther knows nothing about what is going on in the kingdom right now. But what Esther does know is she can trust her uncle Mordecai. He is a wise guy. He's raised her. He's proven himself to her. And it would have been so easy for Esther. She's the queen of the land, right? She doesn't have to listen to anyone except the king, pretty much, right? She could be like, Mordecai, you don't get the pressures of being queen. And she'd be right, you know? Mordecai, you don't understand what's going on. Mordecai, this is so insulting that you would, like, demean yourself like this in front of the palace. Do you not know how weird this is for me? Do you not know how strange this is for me? But what Esther does is instead of embracing all these excuses that she could have came up with, she leans into it and she decides to listen to a wise person that God has placed in her path. That's what courage sometimes does. And then the story continues. Verse 6, we're told this. So Hatak, Esther's chief servant, went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him, including the exact amount of money Haman had promised to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict for their annihilation, which had been published in Susa, that's the capital city, to show Esther and explain it to her. Now, this is a really big deal because we just think of papers like ubiquitous, right? When you drove here, you probably saw like 29 flyers stapled to like the poles for like, tonight at Play Sports Bar, it's like, I don't know, DJ such and such and doing this thing, right? Like we just kind of look at that and we ignore it. This is a culture where like, if you wanted to, like, write something down on paper, you had to, like, make the paper yourself, okay? This, like, it's a valuable resource. You didn't just post anything around, right? So the fact that this has been, like, posted in the city square for people to read and see shows, this is, like, a real thing. This is important stuff, Esther. Like, I'm not making this up. This is, like, the real deal, okay? So he shows it to her, explains it to her, and he told him to instruct her to go into the king's presence and to beg for mercy and plead with him for her people. So, Hatak went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. And here's where Esther is going to have her magic leadership moment. She instructed him to say to Mordecai some not so magic words, actually. All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law. They should be put to death unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. Mordecai, I hear you. I understand you. I'm really sorry that it's so hard out there. But you got to understand, this is going to be hard. Let me tell you why I can't. And Esther highlights for Mordecai, hey, there's some problems, Mordecai. This is against protocol. Okay, this is going to be kind of awkward. The stakes are really high. Okay, I could die. And Mordecai, you probably don't know this. It's been 30 days since I've seen the king. Okay, we kind of think of like the king and queen, like there's some like nuclear family and they spend a lot of time together. That's not how it worked. Okay, the queen would only see the king if the king asked to see the queen. Okay, they didn't eat meals together. They didn't do stuff together. They maintained separate residences in the palace, we know. And so basically, Esther only saw the king if he called for her. And Esther says, it's been a month since the king has called for me. Now, I can assure you, King Xerxes is not going home to an empty bed every night, okay? This is not like, hey, he just hasn't been talking to people. He's been a little, you know, introverted right now. This is like, no, he just hasn't talked to me. And I think, like all of us, if you were in a relationship and they hadn't talked to you and you hadn't talked to them for a month, you'd probably start to think, huh, that doesn't seem like that's going so good, right? Oh, this feels really healthy. This feels really good. You know, husbands, if your wife hasn't talked to you for 30 days, you might want to work on that. You know, might want to say, hey, baby, what's going on? You know, just send her a text right now. You know, even if she's sitting next to you, just do that. Okay, that, like, this is kind of a big deal. And so Esther's saying, hey, there's a lot of problems here. There's a lot of things that could be wrong right here. And Esther, without realizing it, she kind of stumbles into a second thing that courage does. Courage names the excuses. Courage gets honest about the excuses. I don't know if you've ever experienced this or not. An amazing thing happens when you have the courage to bring outside of you all the things that you're feeling about why I can't take action or why I can't do this. There's a pastor named Craig Rochelle, and he's like a pretty big-time leadership expert kind of guy, and he uses a statement I've heard him say a couple times I think is really valuable for us. He says, you can't correct what you don't confront. And his point is, you can't, if you want to fix something, if you want to make something better, you have to have the courage to, like, name it, right? You have to have the courage to own it. You know, I used to have a boss who'd say, hey, the number one job of leadership, Wes, is you've got to define reality. You got to be honest about what's going on. And what Esther does is she becomes honest about what she's thinking and what she's feeling and what she's going through and about the reasons why she doesn't want to do this. Now, I don't know what your scenario, your circumstance is, okay? And I do not want to make light of it, okay? Here's what I know for me. When I face circumstances in my life that are kind of not it, where it's like, Jesus, anyone but me right now, okay? Some of my reasons I give are good ones. A lot of them suck. A lot of them are stupid. Hey, Jesus, I would really love to serve you and honor you and do this thing, but like, Jesus, you don't understand, man. That could be awkward. I would hate to arrive at heaven's gate and be like, hey, remember that one time, Wes? I see you do this thing. But you're like, oh, it's kind of awkward. Like, oh, no. You know, like, imagine Jesus is like, hey, remember the time I died on the cross? You know, like, that was a little worse than awkward, you know? Like I think you can suck it up for 20 seconds to do this, you know? And I'm not saying that to make laugh. Right? I get it, okay? I'm like you, you know? I'm the same way where every once in a while I feel like that nudge. I'm like, oh. Oh no, you know, I'm not really sure. I get it. I understand it, right? That's a bad reason not to follow Jesus, right? The idea of, well, Jesus, this doesn't fit into my previously existing mindset. Jesus, that's just not the kind of thing I do. Well, yeah, that's kind of the point. You know, I'm not trying to turn you into more of you. I'm trying to turn you into me. You know, that's a bad reason. And what's interesting is when I have the courage to, like, write those down, or sometimes I've done this like a crazy person, I'll look in the mirror and I'll just say, I'm not going to do this because blank. And when you say it out loud, it's amazing how childish you discover some of your reasons are and how immature some of your thinking is. And sometimes courage, it just starts with the courage to say, I'm going to name why. I'm just going to let that hang out there. And it's kind of funny how when I do that, over time, God starts to kind of chip away at that little barrier, doesn't he? And so Esther's story continues. You know, she sends back word to Mordecai. Mordecai, sorry for your luck, buddy. Can't. You know, sorry. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200, okay? When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, now this took some guts on Mordecai's part. He sent back this answer, okay? Now remember, he's talking to the queen, okay? This isn't like, you know, just some ordinary person. Esther, do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. Esther, don't you think this is just going to magically get better on its own? Esther, someone's going to find out your secret. You know, like, someone's going to let the cat out of the bag. And let me tell you, when they find out, it's not going to work out well for you, okay? And Esther, and now learning at Mordecai's hands, that's the third thing about courage, that courage, it doesn't just assume things are going to change on their own. In fact, courage knows things don't change on their own. Tell me if I'm the only one that's ever done this. I see a situation, I see a problem, and I think, that's going to be a problem for future Wes to resolve. Or I see the damage on the horizon, I see the yellow flashing light on the dashboard of my life, and I just think, maybe it'll just get better. And let me, I mean, maybe you've discovered this, maybe you haven't, so let me save you a lot of trouble. It doesn't. In fact, what happens is the decision I make to delay today is just going to make the problem worse tomorrow. And I've never gotten 3 months or 6 months or 3 days or 6 days down the line and thought, man, I'm so glad I delayed solving the problem until then, because what happens is it gets thornier and it gets more complicated and it gets more sensitive. And I'm seeing a lot of head shakes. Okay, apparently I'm not the only one that has this problem. That's good to know, because it just does. That's the way life works. People are complex. Sin is complex. The world is broken. And what that means is when we leave things unattended, they don't just get better. they tend to drive toward more and more brokenness. I've never thought, man, I'd like to lose weight, so I'm just going to have no plan and no purpose, and then we're just going to watch, Lord Jesus, take the wheel right to Pizza Hut, wherever it is I'm going, and doing that. That's not how life works, okay? Things don't change on their own. They change because you confront them. They change because you decide today is the day, right? They change simply just by changing your mindset to say, hey, when I choose to delay this problem, I know I'm creating a problem for future me that's going to be worse than it is right now, so I should just do it now. It never ceases to amaze me how I'll talk to, this is married people thing, okay? I'll talk to married couples, and their relationship isn't bad, but it's not great. And I'll say something like, hey, you should take a vacation together, just the two of you, right? You should have a date night, right? You should ask friends to watch kids or do whatever, And they're like, oh, I don't know, that's going to be hard. And they come up with all the excuses, and they say them out loud. And then, what's very sad to watch is you just kind of watch over time. Sometimes, not all the time, of course, but sometimes the relationship, they just drift apart. And then all of a sudden, I'll watch this couple that a couple years ago or months ago or weeks ago, it was like, oh, we couldn't ask friends to watch our kids. Now they're spending hundreds and thousands of dollars to see counselors and to talk to. They're pulling out all the stops. They're canceling their work schedule. They're doing all this stuff. They're uprooting their lives to try and fix their marriage, which is a noble thing. I saw myself thinking, man, some maintenance early on really could have helped. We could have avoided this altogether, because our problems kind of work that way. And courageous people understand problems work that way. They have the wisdom to see that. So Mordecai sends word back to Esther, and he's not done, actually. He keeps going, and he shows us another thing. He says, Esther, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance from the Jews will arrive from another place. Whew, that's hashtag faith right there, Mordecai. Glad you see that. I do not see that right now, actually. But you and your father's family will perish. Esther, you're just going to be just another guy, just another girl. Esther, no one's going to remember your story because at this critical juncture, you chose to deny and delay. Esther, who knows that you've come to your royal position for such a time as this? Courage connects the dots on God's work behind the scenes. We talked about this last week, so I won't dive into it a ton this week, but here's what courage does. Courage looks and it traces God's steps behind the scenes. And it notes and it discovers, wow, God, you've been at work up to this point. And if you've been at work all the way up to this point, I think we can trust that you're going to be at work beyond this point. And so I should just act in a way that assumes that is true. That's called faith. That's called confidence. That's called trust. And Mordecai looks at Esther's story and he says, Esther, is not like, Esther, I hate to tell you, you didn't become queen on your own because you're so amazing. Do you not see the 50 other things that happened to get you up to this point? Do you not see the poetic beauty in how you're right here in this moment, in this time, for such a place, for such a purpose? It's because God's been at work behind the scenes. If he's been at work up to now, we can trust him after now as well. So he sends word to Esther. And Esther apparently takes his words to heart. And so Esther responds, and her response now is a little bit different this time. Esther 4:15, she sends this reply to Mordecai. Go. Okay, that's an action word. That's a doing word. That's a word that sounds like I'm resolved on something. Go. Gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days, night and day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. Okay, now that's a really big deal. Don't know if you know this or not. My medical degree is from WebMD.com, so I'm not great. But you can only go like 3 days without drinking something, and then you do this thing called die. This is pretty severe fast, okay? This is a pretty big deal. Now, here's another thing you should know. Esther declares this fast over Passover, is what kind of Bible scholars have figured out. They've dated when she gives this little proclamation here. And Passover, to the Jewish people, that's like the biggest festival on their calendar. This would be the equivalent of if you left church today and on your phone you got like a little thing from CNN or something, and it said, breaking news, the First Lady has just announced that America is going to have 3 fast days on December 24th and 25th and 26th. It's like, whoa, okay, Trump, you messed with a lot, but now you mess with Christmas. You know, like, this is a big deal, okay? You're not allowed to do that, all right? This is a problem right now. Like, this is what Esther's done, you know? Like she's kind of saying, hey, man, like, this is severe. This is a drastic time, and it calls for drastic, drastic measures. And the drastic measures that Esther takes are the next thing we learned about courage, that courage seeks God. We sing a song here every once in a while, and it says, God, we won't move without you. And we just kind of sing that line a few times together. And I think that's what seeking God looks like. It looks like this resolve to say, God, I'm here in this spot, and I'm not moving until you tell me to move. Some of you, I feel like I've kind of spent most of the time kind of challenging those of us who are more passive to get active. I want to take a second to talk to the active people for a second, where it's like, I'm already there, Wes. You know, I've already got my plan. I've already texted 7 people. You know, like, I've got my attorney on hold if I need him, you know, whatever it is. Okay? We have a tendency sometimes in our drive to get stuff done that we move a little bit faster than God does. It's not because God can't move fast. It's because God is saying, you need to slow down. You need to wait, you need to hold your horses, and you need to watch me work. We like football here in Tallahassee, right? Like, sometimes I think the image of what God wants us to do is he's kind of like, 5 people shook their head no, so that's good. That's called connecting with your audience right here. Right, you have to be like a running back, right? When the running back gets the ball, right, he doesn't just like go barreling immediately into the offensive line, right? He sits back and he waits for the offensive line to clear the way for him. So he can run through, right? He goes through the gap so he can get a big gain, right? And sometimes we need to do that. We just need to slow down and say, God, you know what? I need to stop and I need to seek you. But we also, seeking God doesn't mean I have perfect clarity on what the future always is going to look like either. Brennan Manning wrote this book called The Furious Longing for God, and he talks about this man who was looking for direction in his life. He wanted clarity in his life, and so he went to India, and he spent a few months with Mother Teresa when she was doing work on the streets of Calcutta, India, taking in basically dying people and giving them kind of dignity in their last hours and days and weeks of life. And on the first day that this man was here, he met Mother Teresa. And this is like the most Mother Teresa way to begin a conversation ever. She said, nice to meet you, young man. How can I serve you? And he responds to Mother Teresa, and he says, well, would you pray for me for clarity? You know, that's kind of the whole reason why he came. And Mother Teresa responds, and she says, I will not pray for that. Which is like, oh, wouldn't expect that. You know, let's try this again. All right, please pray for clarity. And he says, well, why not? I mean, I've come from thousands of miles to hang out with you, to be a part of what you're doing here. You always seem to move with such clarity about what to do. And she says, young man, I have never had clarity once in my life, which I don't know if that's encouraging or discouraging to you that Mother Teresa feels that way. And she said, but what I have always had is trust. And so what I am going to pray for you is that you would trust. And then she laughed and she walked away. Some of us need to seek God because we need to slow down. Some of us need to seek God, and you're kind of like in perpetual seeking mode, aren't you? And you're like, God, just the minute you show me, the minute you tell me, the minute you make it clear, the minute I see it, right? And God's like, I'm pretty much done all I can do, you know, like I'm kind of here, you know, and you kind of have a sense, you have an inkling, you have that little voice inside, you know what the right thing to do is, and your problem is you just don't want to do it. And the beautiful thing about Esther's story, because when Esther gives a response, it's not the response of someone that's like, I can't wait to go to see the king. It's, I think this is kind of going to fail, actually. Like, I don't think it's going to work out too well. But what Esther models for us is sometimes faith is really bold, and sometimes faith is just the courage to be honest with God and to seek God and to say to God, God, you know I really don't want to do this, but I think you want me to do this. So God, I'm willing to do this. I just want you with me as I do this. And God looks at that kind of faith. He says, I can work with that. I can do something with that. Esther's story finishes up. And she says, when this is done, I will go. Right? She announces in advance, here's what I'm going to do. I will go to the king, even though it's against the law. And if I perish, I perish. Whew, big stuff there, Esther. So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. And right here, Esther shows us the one last thing that courage does. Courage embraces accountability. Accountability is a scary thing because it's one thing for me to be mulling on something and mulling over something. It's another thing for me to say out loud to people who know me and love me and care about me, here's what I'm going to do. Because that introduces accountability. Courageous people know that my inner strength is not going to be enough to push me across the finish line. So I better have some external structures in my life that help me get there. Accountability feels incredibly dangerous, but it's incredibly powerful. Nothing can change your behavior oftentimes, like the simple shame that comes when I announce in advance to someone, you can count on me to do this, and knowing that I have the deadline, the accountability, the promise that I will do this. And Esther does that. So as we finish today, we're going to flash all these things on the screen. I'm going to tick them off one by one. And like I said at the beginning, here's all I'm asking you to do. I want you to pick one or two of these and think about what you're facing, what you're going through. I want you to do it. I'm not asking you to do the big thing. I'm not asking you to do everything. I'm just asking you to do one thing, two things. So what is it? Courage listens to wise people. Some of you have a wise person. You've been kind of keeping them at arm's length, and today's the day I listen. Courage names the excuses. It gets honest about why I'm not doing what I know I should be doing. Courage knows things don't change on your own. Some of us need to walk out of here today with the conviction of like, I know I need to deal with this because I know a month from now it's going to be even worse. It's going to be harder. Courage connects the dots on God's work. Maybe you just need to sit back and you need to reflect and you need to say, wow, God, I see what you've been doing and I trust that you can be counted on to continue doing great things. Courage seeks God. Maybe some of you need to leave this place, and like Esther, you need to fast, you need to pray, you need to do something that's out of the norm for you to seek God. And lastly, courage embraces accountability. Some of you, before amen gets said on the prayer to close this message, you need to open up your phone and you need to send a text and you say, I will X by Y to someone. This is what courage does. Courage is driven to do something. It's okay if right now you're not ready to do the big something. But let's start to do the little somethings that Esther models for us to get there. Next week, we'll talk about what happens when the time comes for me to take the big action, do the big thing. But for right now, let's do the small things. Because as we do them over time, they get us ready for the big thing. Father, I thank you for the wisdom that we can learn from Esther and from her story. I thank you, Father, for the beautiful, beautiful truth, God, that you use imperfect people to do amazing and incredible things. I pray you would use this church right now to do incredible things, to do big stuff, to do awesome things as we follow you. God, give us the wisdom to hear your voice, to sense what you are asking us to do. And God, I pray that you would give us the courage to go and to do it. We pray this, Jesus, in your powerful and your perfect name. Amen.